Hello, friends. This is Dave Larzelier, and you're listening to the Balanced Band Director Podcast, a show about music teaching, leadership, and balancing your responsibilities as a teacher, spouse, and/or parent in order to live your best life. Each episode, I have the tremendous honor to speak to educators, composers, and friends who share their insights and experiences about life and teaching. If you enjoy the podcast, please consider leaving a rating and review and share with friends and colleagues that you think might benefit from these conversations. Additionally, connect with me on Facebook and Instagram at Balanced Band Director. Today's podcast is brought to you by Work of Art Custom Batons. Mark is a master craftsman who specializes in creating one-of-a-kind conducting batons that are crafted to fit each conductor. Work of Art also markets score study pencils and protective baton tubes. I've used Mark's batons for years and love the look and feel of my batons. Please visit Work of Art at www.woacb.com to see all that they offer. Again, that's woacb.com. You can also follow on Facebook and Instagram at Work of Art Custom Batons. And now, on to the show. Patty, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you?
Good. So it sounds a little bit glitchy.
Okay. Give it just a second.
All right.
If it doesn't get better, we can start over if we need to.
Okay.
It's
fine now.
Okay, great. This happened with Sam too, so no problem.
Can you hear me okay?
Just fine, yeah.
Okay.
How's everything going?
Really well.
Good.
I'm doing well. Yes.
You're on day two of winter break. How does that feel?
It feels really good. I had a busy day one just trying to get a lot of things done, but usually we travel and host people over the holidays, and this year we're doing neither. And although I'll miss seeing everybody, I think I'll have a lot of time to rest.
I totally agree. We usually are gone the entire time. The same thing. We'll certainly miss family, but there will be some upside to that as well. Well, hey, I'm super excited to have you on the podcast today. Why don't you take a second to introduce yourself to everybody, and we'll go from there.
Okay, great. My name is Patty Croft. I'm currently a middle school band director at McDonald Middle School in East Lansing. That's what I'm currently doing. And I've been a lot of things and taught in a lot of places, but that's where I am now.
Got it. So obviously not only are you my colleague and my partner, but honestly, one of my favorite people in the whole world. So I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. I feel the same way.
Okay, cool. Okay. So you're teaching at McDonald Middle School, and why don't you tell us sort of like what, under a normal circumstances, what is your kind of schedule, teaching load, class sizes, all that kind of stuff? Not pandemic. We'll get to that in a second.
Okay. Okay. And I've been in East Lansing, I think this is year 13. And so it's changed a little bit. Each year is a little different, but I'd say we've kind of settled into, I teach sixth grade band. We usually start between 120 to 130 students each year. So, and obviously, you know, you teach along with me, and we usually have another teacher as well. This year it's Michaela Van Adder. And then I teach two sections of seventh grade band and one section of eighth grade band. And we have two jazz bands at McDonald Middle School that meets before school at 7:15. Eighth grade band in real time or in real school meets at 7:15 on Wednesdays, and seventh grade jazz band meets at 7:15 on Thursdays.
Right. Okay, cool. And then, so then can I give us the snapshot of what your pandemic schedule looks like?
Okay, so the pandemic schedule, I think they've done a pretty good job, actually, of our schedule. On Mondays, we meet with all of our classes for about 25 minutes. I use that time to kind of introduce the week. Sometimes I do a little theory thing, but I try to have them play a little bit at least. And then the rest of the week is Tuesday and Thursday is first, second, and third hour meet for about an hour. And Wednesday and Friday, fourth, fifth, and sixth hour meets for about an hour. We have office hours prior to teaching. So office hours are at 11. We provide them asynchronous things, activities, I mean, practice sheets and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I just started jazz band last week, which will start in earnest in January.
Got it. Yeah. Same here. That's kind of what we're doing at the high school as well. And I know that you, you know, are a awesome clarinetist and, you know, are you still playing much or teaching clarinet?
No, I have one private student and I was playing in a couple quintets and I'm not doing that right now. It's funny you ask that because, you know, before moving to Michigan, I had 27 different careers. But I was mostly a clarinetist. You know, I played in an orchestra and I taught clarinet at just a small local university. And I always said one piece of music I always want to play on my clarinet is Appalachian Spring. I just have never had a chance to play it. And the day I play that will be the next day. I would be happy to just put my clarinet in the case and leave it there, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I've been lucky because I got to do a lot of different things and I feel okay with that.
So have you played Appalachian Spring?
No. So okay. That's why it's not totally in the case yet.
Yeah, not done yet. That's great.
But even just like the 13 winds version or the 13 instrument version. So I just thought of like sometime getting some friends together and just playing it. And then honestly, I could be done. I loved playing when I played. We moved here, gosh, I don't know, 2002. Prior to that, I played for 8 years in a local orchestra. I'd say it's a per-service orchestra, kind of like Jackson Symphony, perhaps, quality like that. And we played great literature. It was a wonderful time. And it was kind of bonus for me because as a band director and music teacher, you know, I kind of got to dip my toe in the water of being a professional, performing musician. And so that was kind of icing on the cake for me. So I'm okay to not play after having been able to do that.
Very cool. Well, I know, you know, the other thing I know that you didn't mention is that you started the New Horizons program here in East Lansing at MSU. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really neat thing. Can you talk about a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. So when I was at graduate school at the Eastman School of Music, Roy Ernst was the founder of the New Horizons band, the New Horizons programs. And he was my conducting teacher, actually. And he talked a little bit about that program. He had just started. It was in the early 90s. And I kind of put that in the back of my head as that's something I want to do when it's the right time and the right place. And we were living in first Colorado and then South Dakota at the time. And we moved here to Michigan. My husband, Michael, teaches bassoon at Michigan State. And probably about a year after we moved here, I felt the time was right to begin the program. So it was my mom job, to be honest with you. I wanted to do something musical, but still be home with my kids if I could. And we started out with 11 people in the band. We met Tuesdays and Thursdays from 9 to 11. And there are camps all over the country. I've been fortunate enough to be asked to teach at some of those. And so now we have two bands. We have a Monday night band and a Tuesday and Thursday band and an orchestra, string orchestra, and a jazz band. And it's a program that I just really feel strongly about. It introduces adults who have either never played an instrument or hadn't played one in a long time to music and to playing an instrument and being in an ensemble. And it's just a great experience, I think, for everybody. It's kind of like a family.
Yeah. And I've known a lot of people that have gone through that program. I mean, my mom plays in that program. And so, I mean, I think it's a great service for our community, you know, and just another great outlet to offer music to obviously a population that would not normally get it without that. So, you know, cool. Very good.
Yeah, I like it. We just had our first virtual concert on Tuesday and I think it went okay. It was really fun.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, I know you said you've bounced around quite a bit. Can you maybe just give us kind of the Reader's Digest version of what you did before you were in East Lansing, kind of all over?
Sure. I'm from upstate New York originally, and I started teaching there for a couple of years. And then my husband and I got married. I'm what they call a trailing spouse. my original plan was to be the best high school band director in New York State.
Of course, that's what we all wanted.
Yes, don't we all start that way? And then we moved to Colorado. He played in the Air Force Academy band, and I taught on Fort Carson Army Base. I taught middle school there and in one of the elementary schools. That was an amazing experience, to be honest with you. I enjoyed my time there a lot. And then my husband, Michael, got another job playing as one of the core members, actually the South Dakota Symphony. And so we moved there. And back to the high school band director thing, I told him I would only go with him if I could get a high school band job. Well, being female, not from South Dakota.
Right. Tough. Yeah. World to break into.
Yeah.
I know.
But I did it. I got a high school band job there and did that. Then taught there for a few years, had my son. My intention was to continue teaching. I was teaching aerobics at the time. I was playing in the orchestra. I was doing all the things. And then my son was born. And I have to say, like, that was it. And the year he was born, my band was selected to play at Bandmasters, which is like MMC. And we had a trip planned. I was going to take my band to Colorado. And I had my son, and it was really crazy because here I had, you know, it was not the easiest delivery. And so here I was supposed to play at our state convention and had this newborn and was not going back to school as soon as I thought. And so I had local college band directors work with my students while I was still on maternity leave. And so I took my son with me to the, you know, to the Bandmasters, and we conducted that concert. And then a few months later, I packed him up in the percussion van with one of my sisters who came as my nanny and drove with the high school band to Colorado on our trip. And then I taught one more year and I thought, this is crazy.
Crazy.
And so that's when I was lucky and had a really big clarinet studio.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough that I did actually 1 year stint as a director of instrumental ensembles, which on paper sounds great. But it was actually, I did a local University of Sioux Falls, taught clarinet there, and I taught the concert band and actually the college community orchestra. And that was a lot of fun. Actually, I enjoyed that. So then I did a few other things and then we moved here. And I didn't teach right away. We were here several years before I came back to teaching.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
When you said you grew up in upstate New York, when approximately did you know that you wanted to have a career in music, either as a teacher or as a player or whatever?
Probably like sophomore year of high school, I would say. Yep, I got really serious.
Yeah.
And practiced my clarinet a lot.
Yep.
And I was one of those people that made the not smart decision of only applying to one college. And I went to Ithaca, and then sophomore year I was taking some lessons with Stanley Hasty, who was a clarinet teacher at Eastman at the time, and I was really considering transferring there. But I'd started dating Michael and decided that I wanted to continue at Ithaca. And so I think it was, you know, a good thing that I stayed where I stayed. But I'd say sophomore year of high school is pretty much when I started to get serious. I was pretty bad in eighth grade. I mean, I remember I had this terrible embouchure and oh my gosh, I was a terrible clarinet player.
Was there something that turned it around? I mean, was it, you know, did you just fell in love? Is that what it was? Just, you know?
Yeah. I just, you know, I had a teacher that influenced me and so it went from there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, cool. You know, and one of the things, you know, I love teaching with you. I think that, you know, we work really well together. I'm just wondering, if you have any kind of like organizational systems that you think are really helpful, maybe especially to younger teachers, that would be, you know, maybe beneficial about kind of creating boundaries or helping kind of balance your life. I mean, you have a lot of things going on with your career and your family and your new horizons and your all the things, as you like to say. You know, what are some things that help you keep all that stuff organized?
Well, one thing is I don't require a lot of sleep, which much to the dismay of my family. But as far as organizationally, it's funny, you know, you mentioned young people. They have all they have all those systems in place that I wouldn't have. But I do have to say, I make a list every single day of all the things I need to do. And I take great pride in crossing them off. And I think a younger teacher could benefit from doing that. Write everything down, whether or not you do it, you know, on your phone or have an app or anything. I'm old school. I literally write it on a piece of paper. But I also think it's easy to look at things as monumental tasks, but if you break them down into the different elements and just think, okay, I have a concert coming up. Well, what does that mean? Well, that means you have to pick your music. That means you have to do your seating charts. That means you have to do the program, you know, that just all of those things. It can be daunting, but if you actually write those things down, and then you can, then your brain has space to do other things. And I put my home tasks on the same sheet as my work tasks. Not a lot of people do that. I know my husband, for example, has a color-coded calendar, and that works for him. But I just like it all in one place. And I think that it is okay if you are a young teacher and it takes you longer to do things. Taking my list example, then you put that thing on the list for the next day. And it just helps. But I just, I compartmentalize a lot. And for some people, this works well. For other people, this would not work well. For example, I have my school email is entirely separate from my home email, which is entirely separate from my MSU email. So then when I'm in my MSU email, for example, I'm only going to focus on New Horizons Band. Like it's all in that one spot. That's kind of the hat I'm wearing. And then same with personal stuff. You know, if I need to email my mom or contact my book club friends or anything like that, you know, that's the frame of mind I'm in. I think compartmentalizing is huge.
So what's really funny is I've taken that from you. And when I first started teaching, I kind of ran everything through my personal email, you know, and school email has obviously become much more significant in the last 5 to 10 years, you know, but they have to keep track of it and, you know, it's FOIA-able and all that stuff. But I've for some high reason, I don't even know why this happened, but my principal at my high school has gotten a hold of my personal email. And that's no big deal, but he sends everything to me on my personal email. And it kind of makes me crazy because I've borrowed this from you, but I've gotten really good at compartmentalizing. And like, you know, to have your boss email you on your personal email, it kind of like is just very alarming. I don't know how to handle it. And I don't know how to say, I don't know how to tell him that, hey, you know, I know you probably just type my name in and it pops up, but like, can you make sure that you put this on my school email? It's a very awkward situation.
Right. I can understand that.
Yeah. Cool. Well, how about, do you have pedagogical tricks or like things? I mean, you're an amazing teacher. I love watching you teach, you know, but like, what are some things that again, might be helpful to a young teacher? And I hate to call them tricks because that's not really the right word, but just kind of like things that are maybe unique to you, that if a student comes through your program, you want to make sure that that kid understands this X, Y, and Z about anything.
Well, that's a big question.
That's a big question.
That's okay. One thing for new teachers is it's okay to not know everything, and it's okay to admit that you don't know something, you know, whether it's a fingering or whether it's a behavioral thing. So I just want to make sure I put that out there. It's funny because I like to look at the kids. I just look at them as people. I don't know. I know we all do, right? We're all educators. But I feel like if I look at that first and then they're a trumpet player, if that makes sense. And I don't know if how this was working for you, but I feel like I can still kind of get an idea of their personality, even 2D, even through the computer. So if there's a student who is playing something all wrong, and you just have a sense, you could be like, wow, that was pretty awful. And some kids could handle that. Other kids couldn't even handle you saying, hey, by the way, F sharp's middle finger. So, I mean, I think that's the first thing. I do greet the kids when they come in every class. I do, when they leave, say goodbye, and also digitally. But I also think it's important also to know your instruments. But again, if you're not comfortable, it's okay to ask advice, or to even turn your first flute player and say, I forget, when you trill from C to D, is it the first trill key or the second trill key? But as far as tricks, I do a lot intuitively, actually. It's not like I read a book on how to teach dotted rhythms. A lot is intuitive, to be honest with you.
Well, and I think you bring up such a good point about knowing kids and knowing, you know, having a relationship with them, I think is really the thing that I think you're kind of dancing around. But, you know, and I think it's tricky, especially for young teachers, because most of us go into this career because we love music. We like playing our instrument. We love playing in an ensemble. And, you know, not necessarily right away because we love students. We love, you know, the kind of the process, you know, that's something that I think that, you know, great teachers come to realize really quickly. And, you know, maybe unsuccessful teachers never come to that conclusion, I think. But I think that's really what it comes down to, is you have to, the kid comes first, the kid comes before the music, you know, and I think that is something that, you know, that's tough for young teachers to learn, especially because, again, not all of us go into music. At least I'm speaking for myself and most people that I know. We don't all go into music because we like students, right? You don't think about really that necessarily. You like do it because you love music.
Right. And actually that is such a good point. As I reflect on, you know, when I went into music and you asked me that question about my influence, and it was, you know, I had no problem sitting and practicing scales for 2 hours. But I think for me, I think because I kind of accomplished all of my professional goals and even then some, and left teaching for 10 years. And I came back. And so I didn't have, for me personally, I don't feel like I need to prove anything to myself or to other people musically. So I'm okay with just loving up Brian Balmiches, you know? I mean, but also having my students listen to Beethoven, or, you know, and you know this, my own personal children are string players, and whenever I'm trying to select music and I'll have the Pepper website playing music and they're listening and all they say is band, band, you know, and but I'm okay with that because I know there's music inside that, but maybe not when I was 23, you know?
Right.
I just think that it really has been fun to not feel like I have to prove myself in that way. I mean, I had to prove myself in different ways with this job. You know, it was a program that kind of needed a little growth. And I'll never forget, I overheard, I may have shared this with you privately before, that I overheard my very first event with the kids, and I overheard a mom say to another mom, "Well, she seems nice enough. Let's see if she knows what she's doing." And that has stuck with me. I mean, that was 13 years ago. I feel like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
So my superintendent at the time kind of pulled me aside and looked at me. I knew him previously, and he said, "I'm counting on you to build this program." So that's the pressure I felt. I didn't feel the pressure like, gee, can I conduct Lincolnshire Post? You know what I mean? I did not feel that pressure at all.
Right. Right. So do you feel like you changed or like just maybe like adapted to that differently than in your previous jobs? Did you approach the job differently? I mean, you had been gone, you've been out of it for, you know, like you said, about 10 years, and you became a parent, you became a mom, which obviously changes your perspective. But do you feel like you became a different teacher because of the kind of pressure that you were feeling?
You know, what's interesting is I've moved around so much that I never know if a change in a place or if it changes the place or the time, right? So not only did I feel the pressure of building a program, but I had never taught in a situation where you teach all of the kids at once. So the learning curve for me was so huge. It was so huge that the pressure I felt was different than any other pressure I had. I also felt a responsibility because of my husband's job and some of his colleagues' kids were in our program. I wasn't some random person people didn't know. I felt that kind of pressure. I've also, because we've moved a lot and because I'm kind of a square peg round hole person, I've felt like I haven't really 100% fit in. A lot of the Michigan band directors all know each other. And did you go to State or did you go to U of M or did you go to Central? You know, and I'm like, none of the above.
Yeah.
But in a way, it's kind of freeing because I don't feel, you know, the pressure maybe, oh gosh, this was my classmate in school and I was kind of a goof in school and I need to prove myself now that I've got this big program. I felt the pressure differently than any other place for so many reasons, and not just because I was told to build the program. Also was just a lot more mature than in previous jobs. But actually, when I got that high school band job in South Dakota, I felt pressured. The program was small. They wanted me to build the program. I feel like that's a thing I do. I've always built programs and I never stayed long enough. You know, now you're stuck with me. And I'll never forget that the person I replaced had a loyal following. And the program may not have been as musically advanced as maybe some of the students thought they were. And so I had different pressure there than here, because there they thought they were great.
Which can be hard too. Yeah. I've been lucky. The three jobs that I've had, I've come into programs that, for one reason or another, had needed just a little kind of kick in the butt, you know, but they've all been like quality programs, you know, and so it's been kind of nice to step into programs like that where, like you said, she seems nice enough, you know, let's see if she knows what they're doing. And then that's kind of where the bar was in some of the, you know, situations I was in, which was, you know, I guess, like you said, a little bit freeing, kind of took some of the pressure off, but in some cases added maybe a different pressure than what you were expecting.
And I also think what's interesting is I've gotten older. I really think a lot more. I think a lot more about teaching. And at the end of every day, I honestly ask myself, I'm lying in bed at night, was I a good enough teacher that day? I mean, I do the same thing though. Was I a good wife that day? Was I a good mom that day? I mean, I really reflect every day. And sometimes I feel like as a teacher, we're kind of weebles. I don't know if I'm dating myself, but they're those toys with round bottoms and you like knock them over and they pop right back up. And I feel like when you're teaching, you know, no matter how many times you are knocked down, you just pop right up the next day and you're going to like, you know, just take the bull by the horns and you are going to do a good job the next day. And then I go back, you know, I go to bed at night and I think, oh, what did I do wrong? How could I be better? Even if I, you know, if I say something to you, oh gosh, I should word that differently. And I think that comes with age and experience and just the ability to kind of get out your side yourself enough to really reflect, how did I impact people today?
Yeah, that's powerful. That's cool though. And I think that, like you said, there's a certain amount of experience that enables you to have that perspective. You know, I think when you're young, at least again, speaking for myself, you're so overwhelmed. It's like, you don't know what you don't know, you know? And then as you start to kind of get more comfortable with it, then you can get in that zone where you can go, okay, you better evaluate your own skills, not only as a teacher, but then just kind of as a human being. And you're able to kind of reflect on that and think about how you can improve each of those parts of your
exactly.
life.
And, you know, I was just thinking also about, you know, I tease about the literature for middle school band, but one thing I really feel strongly about is that kids play musically and that they play correctly from the beginning. You know, you separate your notes with your tongue. You try for four measure phrases. You are able to sing in tune. And I just think, you know, those are the kinds of things, I know I'm going back a couple questions, but those are the kind of things that I do better now than I did when I was a younger teacher.
Sure.
You know, because I take that music that's maybe not, you know, Mozart, but try to make it as musical as possible.
Right. Great. Here's kind of, this question's a little out of left field, but how do you see us getting out of the pandemic, not only as a country, but like you and me our program?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, wear a mask, people. Secondly, get the vaccine when you can.
It's not hard.
And I think as far as our program goes, I think we'll be okay. We've done an okay job building those connections, trying to give the kids musical experiences. I am generally a very optimistic person. And so I think that we will weather this storm. It's going to look different. You know what, MSBOA?
Yeah.
We might not have good instrumentation next year. I'm just saying. So, you know, but I do think, you know, I feel like we need to go in steps and we need to be patient. We all need to be patient. We can't move too fast.
Yeah, that's what I say to people all the time is like, people just need to chill out. Like we can't go back to normal so quickly. Like just be patient. This thing's going to end when it's going to end. But like we got to try to mitigate the damage as much as possible.
Yeah, we have got to be there for kids. In fact, just before this, I checked my email and I got an email from a sixth grader who was apologizing for not doing a good job this semester. What a poor kid. So I emailed her back. I'm like, I'm not just in band. You know, she just literally sent a note of apology to all of her sixth grade teachers. We got to take care of that kind of thing before we worry about like, you know, well, gee, make sure you're playing the right notes. But I think if everybody just slows down and breathes and plays the long game, will be fine.
Yeah. That's it. You know, I heard, I can't remember where I heard this. It was on a radio show or a podcast or something, but they basically said that like every pandemic that we've had, that we have good records for has lasted about 18 months, regardless of what happens, regardless of damage to the economy, regardless of vaccines, they all last about 18 months. Right. So, you know, if you kind of keep that in the back of your mind, that like things are not going to go back to normal until this summer. And even then, like if we start next, you know, when we start school next fall, it's not going to look like it did 2 years ago, but chances are we're going to go back to school in the fall and things are going to be, from a schedule standpoint, normal. You know, and then we have to kind of rebuild out of that, but it's going to be, you know, and then another couple of years out of that before things are quote unquote, you know, back to normal. But like you said, I think you got to, like, you play the long game, be patient. Don't try to rush what you want to happen because you have no control over it.
Right. Except for exactly. You can wear a mask. And you know, what I'm looking forward to whenever that happens is being in a room with kids. I feel like we'll all be changed. I feel like we're kind of more human to each other. And I just think we all need to have grace and we need to have patience. But I think when we do see each other, there will be that feeling that we've been through something together. It's not been the same. What what I'm going through is not the same as that little girl who emailed me this morning or this afternoon. But we've still been through something together, that collective, you know, angst that we've had. And I'm looking forward to being back with people, but when it's time.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. But all right, let's transition just a little bit. You've talked a lot about ways that you've achieved balance in your career and in your teaching, but what are some other things that you've done that have helped you achieve balance just in your own, like, personal life as a mom and, as like you said, as a wife and just as a person? You know, you talk a little bit about that. I mean, I'll just lead you a little bit. Like, I think, again, you're somebody that has a really good concept of having a balanced life, you know, knowing you. You're an amazing mom and you have a great kids and a great family and all these, you know, things that you're able to balance and juggle with your career, which is difficult for everybody. But maybe just some talk a little bit about some, not, right. And I hate to use the word tricks. It's not tricks, but just systems or strategies that have helped you be successful balancing all those things.
Okay. So right now during the pandemic, I'll just say that. I go for walks every morning, and that's not always possible. But I back up, thankfully, to a pretty nice natural area. So I walk for a couple miles every morning. That kind of centers me for the day. But I do have to say, with my kids, pretty much everything I've done has been kind of very intentional. And so I don't feel like I've had to react to a lot of things. When we would take trips, I don't know why this just popped into my head. And, you know, this again dates me. We'd drive across the country. We're living in South Dakota. Our family's from the East Coast. And we would drive because we didn't have money to fly twice a year. And I would get books from the library, those book on tape where it go beep and you turn the page. And I would always get two of the books because, you know, they'd be in different car seats. I'm a planner. So all of, you know, their whole upbringing, I planned a lot. But also, to be honest with you, and who knows who's going to hear this, like if my kid was running a race on Tuesday at 4 o'clock, and I had a staff meeting, maybe I would leave the staff meeting at 3:45. That race will not happen again, but there are endless staff meetings.
Right. And most of them can be summed up in an email.
Right. And so I understand. I'm not advocating being a blow off. I was fortunate in that when my kids were in even more things, I was in multiple buildings. And I remember one of the schools would have their staff meetings like in the morning. So if there was something I knew one of my kids had in the afternoon, I would go to the morning staff meeting at that other school. I was at this other school. I just felt like it was important. I was very, you know, good about using my personal days always to do a field trip. I two kids, it worked out great. Two personal days. Each personal day a year was a field trip with one kid or another. we've had pretty pretty understanding administration. So, you know, when my kids went to Germany with their high school orchestra and I had to leave school a day early, had permission to do that. Again, it goes to the list thing. And I love to organize, even though like I might be messy and piley, I'm organized. And so, and just taking the time, for your kids, because your job will be there. And I do have to say, when my kids graduated, I felt like, okay, now I can organize my music library. Now I can maybe listen extra to this, you know, more pieces of music. I can organize the piles of paperwork. That stuff's always going to be there, but the kids aren't. And before you know it, you know, they're bigger than you. They're smarter than you. And, you know, your job will be there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, that's something that, again, I think I've, you know, tried to take from you, because my, you know, I'm about 10 years behind you with the kids. And so it's been great to have that perspective. And I feel kind of the same way. And I've luckily, I've been able to, like you said, kind of use your schedule a little bit to your advantage, or, you know, if you need to kind of sneak out of this building to go to that one, it's like, you know, I'll make things work. And it's, I think it's fine. I don't think any administrator have an issue with it. Like you said, we've had very supportive people that kind of get that, especially when your kids are young.
Yeah. You know, really get and I just feel like, you know, not to be too philosophical, but, you know, when my time comes, I will know that I did the best I could and that I gave my all to my family, and also was able to give a whole heck of a lot to my job.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. You had mentioned that you guys travel, and I know that, you know, Michael's had different obligations over the summer and things like that. And maybe you could talk a little about some of your favorite trips, that your favorite places outside of Michigan.
Okay, first of all, I'm learning to love Michigan. Like, UP, wowzers. So, well, we go to Colorado every summer. Michael plays in a music festival there. And so definitely Colorado is my happy place. I know your brother lives there, so you've been there a lot. And and I'll get back to my other favorite places, but here's also a deal. Talk about being a good spouse. My husband and I have this deal that because I followed him around our whole marriage, I can choose where we retire. And I'm taking that task very seriously. So every summer when we go to Colorado, I visit different towns and check it out. So there's that. We go to Door County, Wisconsin for another music festival. And that's just really fun. It's so much like people who have cottages, you know, it's the Michigan thing, but it's Wisconsin. And honestly, our son lived in Germany for a year and our daughter did a study abroad there. And so two Christmases ago, we traveled there, went over to Germany. And I have to say that the best trip of my life was, they were in charge of the trip and they planned everything. And we went from Germany down to Switzerland. We went sledding in the Alps, and then we went to Northern Italy and we stayed at just the cutest Airbnb and went cross country skiing there. And then we went up to Austria and then we went back to Germany. And it was just really great because the kids planned everything. We gave them a budget and we said, this is how much we have, make it happen. And it was great. And then actually last October, on a whim, I would not advise this, but my daughter, this is when she was in Germany, she had a long weekend and she was going to travel, take a trip by herself. And I met her in Scotland for a long weekend. And that was super special. Yes, that was super special. Loved that.
That's awesome. Well, it's funny, you know, I've had, my parents have, they say that they've been to all of the national parks.
Oh my gosh, that's
here. Except for Isle Royale. in the whole country. Yeah, I know, right? Of all places. And they have a little camper, and they've been doing that probably the past 10 or 12 years since they retired. They've been, you know, every summer they go hit a couple. And I didn't think much of it. I thought, well, that's kind of cool. It's a neat little thing. But, like, you know, it didn't really appeal to me, you know. And then this last year, even really in the pandemic, like, I've become really interested in fitness and things like this.
Oh,
and
my
now
gosh.
I have this,
oh,
like, obsession with national parks. Like,
yes.
I almost feel like I could just quit my life and get in a van
yes.
and just
okay.
go
so
be people.
Okay, so let me back
people,
up, because
you know?
After Colorado every year, we go to different national parks, and some of our best adventures have been at the national parks. We have pictures. Michael does photography, like the most beautiful picture of our kids at Bryce.
Yeah.
Got to go to Bryce. Back up.
Yeah.
National parks, way to go. Love them. I mean, oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. Love them.
So, yeah. And so, I don't know. I mean, my best friend actually from high school lives in California, and he just bought one of those, you know, they're Sprinter vans, like the Dodge Sprinter van. And he and his wife do. And they go to Tahoe, and they go all over, you know, Northern California. And I kind of, he showed me a picture, and I was like, man, I'm so jealous. That's so awesome. I'd love to do that. And he's like, I'll tell you what, he's like, when the pandemic's over, he's like, you fly out to California, he's like, and we'll drive back to Michigan. He's like, his wife, Lisa, will fly to Michigan, and then drive back home. So that's like my new thing is like, I want to spend like 3 weeks and drive from California back to Michigan in one of those Dodge Sprinter vans. And just
I highly recommend it, because we drive every summer to Colorado. Well, actually, or we take the train. Oh yeah.
Either way, super cool. You get to see the country. People I think are so obsessed with you know, traveling abroad and going to Europe, and I'm like, man, there's so much to see in the United States that people just
When we're driving and we see a brown sign, the brown sign, that's like in the middle of Missouri. There's like this, I took them to a grain museum, like where the guy was having a sandwich at the diner, and he came over and gave us a tour because it was just this off the wall, you know, place. Oh no. Yeah. Driving across the country. Oh yeah. My kids could bore you for hours with tales of places I've dragged them to.
That's awesome. All right, I just have a couple more questions for you. This has been super fun. I mean, I talk to you all the time, but it's been kind of fun to dig in a little bit deeper. Have you ever experienced like a major failure in your career that has later set you up for success? And again, there's probably lots of them, but one maybe.
Okay, did you hear that? I'm speechless.
It's a tough one, because I think we all
about this question is I don't really feel like I've had a lot of success. I'm not just saying that, like, I don't feel like, oh, the time that I did that wrong made me be better this one time. I can't think of a major turning point. I can say, I just know I was not a very good teacher when I started teaching. So it's more of a slow burn. You know what I mean? There was not one. A colossal
lots of little
amount
failures.
Of failures. And I think maybe all those drives across the country, I had a lot of time to think. But it just kind of slowly melded into, you know, being a better teacher. But I don't feel like I've had any great monumental success. It's not like, oh, well, the time that I did that led to me conducting at Midwest. You know, I can't think of, I wish I had something more, you know, more important to say, but I can't think of that. I know that I was not a good teacher, and now I'm a better teacher, but I can't, it was more of like slow, little by little. It's like when someone loses weight half a pound at a time, you know, I feel like that.
Well, and I think in our career, you know, different than maybe some other people's careers where you could maybe go a month or 2 months or a year and you don't get feedback right. that's telling you that you're not doing it right. In our career, we get it every day, 5 hours a day. Yeah. If you do something wrong, you're going to know about it. Or if you're not a very good teacher, you're going to know you're not a very good teacher. Yeah. And so you get this constant reminder of like, oh, let's maybe do this a little differently tomorrow. Because
I think if you're not humbled by teaching, you're doing it wrong. You know, I just.
Right. Right. Yeah, for sure. Well, and I always say, you know, there aren't many bad teachers out there, because if you're a bad teacher, you quit. You can't do it, you know. All right, another thing I know that you're into is reading a lot. And I'm wondering if you have any book recommendations, especially something maybe recent.
Okay. So I
probably had lots of time for reading.
As you said, love to read. I love to read. I love to listen to podcasts. Oh my gosh. So I like to read actually biographies or memoirs. I like to read, you know, I belong to a book club, so I read lots of I say Oprah books, but they're more like bestseller kind of books. Most recently, I think I just read this fall, I read Splendid and the Vile. It's about Winston Churchill. Eric Larson wrote it. It's a great book. He's just such a fascinating character.
Okay.
I read Bruce Springsteen's memoir over the summer. You know, I'm dating myself, but I love Bruce Springsteen. I just finished The Brooklyn Bridge, which David McCullough wrote. That book took me a while to read, first of all, because I have like a stack and then it's long and I had, you know, life and I mean, a couple years. Then this summer I got a hammock and I left it out in the rain. So then I had to wait like a couple weeks for the book to dry. then I started that again. I just read Untamed by Glennon Doyle. I think, you know, as a woman, you know, reading a book about like kind of getting empowered is important. And we don't really need to go down that route. But I do think, you know, having sometimes having to deal with people thinking maybe I'm not good at what I do because I'm like 2 feet tall and a girl, you know, it's good to read books like that. I have some friends of mine that turned me on to Louise Penny mystery books. So I just read everything. All over the map, just all over the map.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's, you know, that's something, and I've talked about this on the podcast a little bit before, but like, that's something that I have, that has brought balance into my own life a lot. And I think it's something that, I mean, I try to do like at least a half an hour a day, even if it's like a kind of a chore. Like I honestly try to do it for, like, first thing in the morning, because it's something I can kind of do. I'm usually the first one up in the house, and you know, we just got another puppy, so I'm always up with the puppy. And so that's something that I can, you know, I can sit on my Instagram for half an hour, or I could read a book for half an hour. And like, my day was 100%.
And I have to say, like, getting off Facebook for me, I mean, that gives you so much more time in your day, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and better time, more importantly, right? Yeah. Cool. How about, and again, we can wrap things up here pretty soon. I appreciate your time, but do you have, what advice would you give to young teachers who are just starting their career?
Well, like I said earlier, ask a lot of questions and be okay with not knowing everything. That's huge. I just think that is huge. You know, I've had a lot of student teachers. And the ones who are the most successful are the ones who ask the most questions, and know who to ask too. Be good, be kind to the secretaries, be kind to the custodians. And I'm not talking about like, you know, asking questions about necessarily how to play instruments, which of course is important, but ask your colleague down the hall, what's the procedure for this? You know, kind of get a lay of the land, read the lunchroom. If you have, and you know what, go to the lunchroom. So many band directors pride themselves in not socializing with the staff, or I'm just too busy, I can't go to the lunchroom. I think it's a good idea to get to know your colleagues, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, I feel fortunate about is that, you know, we have a team with me and you and Dave and Michaela, and, you know, it even branches out farther than that, but we're lucky that we teach mm-hmm. in a district where we're not the only music teacher, and, you know, and that we can kind of, you know, really, you know, build off of each other, which I think is really fortunate for us. I certainly have
agreed. I feel really lucky that we have such a good team, because there are people that either they're the only music teacher, or they don't get along with their colleagues. I don't know which would be worse, you know, because we don't have to deal with that, thankfully.
Right. Yeah. I have buddies who literally don't even talk to their like middle school, their high school manager. They don't even talk to the middle school manager like ever. I just can't imagine that. It seems of all, not good for kids, right? That's not a good situation for your program. But yeah. So all right. Well, I guess, and I just have one more question for you, and I apologize. This is an annoying question for a lot of people, but I'm wondering if you had maybe just one piece of music that is just you couldn't live without.
Here's why I'm laughing, is because I mentioned I listened to podcasts, so of course I've listened to your podcasts, and I knew this question was coming. And I told you I make lists, right? So, and in some morbid way, I actually have my funeral planned, because I'm so afraid people will play the wrong music at my funeral. So knowing this.
So that maybe I should rephrase the question.
I have to go look it up. It's funeral? On my, it's on my computer. So it's funny because, I have a list, Dave, because it can't be just one song, because I am that square peg. Okay. I don't have one side of me. But I have a mixtape. So can I take a mixtape? Okay, good. So I'm going to go down my mixtape list, and it's odd. Okay. So the song Rise from Eddie Vedder, because it reminds me of my kids, because my son learned how to play that on mandolin. And every time they play that, my eyes, because speaking of national parks, like I have, you know, memories of driving across the country with my kids singing that song. Rocky Mountain High by John Denver. Closer to Fine by Indigo Girls, because I took a wayward trip to Santa Fe with a friend of mine and played that song constantly. Belong by REM. Notice how none of these yet are actual music people songs. Love Will Never Do by Janet Jackson, because I used to be trim like Janet Jackson was in that video. And then when we kind of get to real music, Shop 5, because the summer I met my husband, we were playing in an orchestra. New York State had like a summer school for the arts, one orchestra worth of students. And it was up at Saratoga Performing Arts Center. And so that year we played Shostakovich 5, and I met Michael there. And so, and plus that is a fun E flat clarinet solo that I got to play. And then of course the soundtrack from Hamilton, because why not? And then if I'm on a desert island, even though it might not be snowy, I'll have to celebrate Christmas. So I have to take the Messiah with me, because it's a Christmas song where there's more than one. So it's not like Sleigh Bells on a Loop. So there's my mixtape.
Got it. Very good. That's a great mixtape. That's very good. Yeah, the record holder for the longest answer to that would be my friend Andy Perkins, who said the the complete recordings of John Williams.
Well, you know, if you're stuck on an island, you're going to need something. I mean, like even Tom Hanks like turned his soccer ball into a person. So, you know.
Right, there you go. Yeah. And how about this is just selfish, because you always have good answers to this, but are you watching?
Oh my gosh, I don't have a good answer to that. No, I've not been watching tons of TV. I mean, my daughter and I watched Call the Midwife. My friend and I were, or Michael and I were watching Grace and Frankie. Schitt's Creek. That was my pandemic show with Heidi. Schitt's Creek, amazing. Yeah, that's, and then I really want to like Dead to Me, but it's one, and we really liked the first season, and I just don't want to be that nervous. So we started to watch it, and then it just makes me nervous. I just can't be nervous. So yeah, I'm not really watching tons. Great British Baking Show literally reruns. I mean,
okay. Yeah, yeah. A good cooking show is always can go a long way. Carla has started watching. She's watching it. She took French in high school, and so she's watching a show that's in French. And I can't read the subtitles because I don't have my glasses on, and so I can't get into it. But she's super into it, so I'm you know, it's been tough.
Right,
it's been a
tough couple of weeks. Well, it is hard though when you know Michael works all the time, so I can't. Like if we start a show, and then I can't cheat on him, so that. So yeah, I'm just like, okay, let me just watch another episode. Right. And the beauty of me, as you get older, you get forgetful. So I actually don't remember who won each Great British Baking Show, even though I've already seen them.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a fun show. We haven't watched that one in a while, but the kids love cooking shows, so that's a good one. Well, hey, like I said, I really appreciate you taking an hour out of your life and having this conversation with me. It's been great to catch up with you and, you know, dig a little deeper into some of these questions that I sort of knew some of the answers to, but it's been super fun. How can people connect with you? If you don't mind giving out an email,
sure.
People have questions, or
first
maybe
of all,
connecting
thank you for having
media.
Me. It is fun to talk to you, and it is, you know, you are one of my favorite people, and I can't wait till after all this is said and done, we could actually do this in person, you know, with a beer or something. So honestly, I'm trying to avoid social media.
Sure.
It's not, but I do have Facebook, but I wouldn't. Yeah. I'm in East Lansing Public Schools. Just look me up.
Don't
in East Lansing. Yeah.
There you go. Awesome. All right, Patty, this has been great. I hope you have a really awesome holiday with your fam and a restful and peaceful
break.
That
would be great. All right. Thanks again. Say hi to your family for me. Okay. Bye.
Okay. You too.
This has been the Balanced Band Director. I appreciate you listening, and I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Again, today's show sponsor is Work of Art Custom Batons. Please visit them at www.woacb.com and connect with Mark on Facebook and Instagram at Work of Art Custom Batons. Please connect with me, Dave Larzalier, on Facebook and Instagram at Balanced Band Director or on email at balancedbanddirector@gmail.com. Until next time, be well.